Well, good morning. That was Midnight Oil, Run by Night, of course, and you're with Margaret O'Connor on Community Matters. Listen, I do apologise. Normally I crack the show off at 9 o'clock in the morning, but this morning life interfered and we're having a fresh start at 10 o'clock this morning. So welcome, everybody. Gorgeous, windy September day, and I am really thrilled. Do you know, we're very blessed. We've got a cracking newspaper in Yooralla. I'll be talking to Louis Van Eckert at 11 o'clock about their latest edition. But we've got an incredible privilege, really, to have the Armidale Times running in and around Armidale, but covering the New England region news and views. And, you know, a very close, clear eye on the politics, I think, is what the Armidale Times presents. And I'm really delighted to have the editor, or one of the editors, publisher, Rod Wise of the Armidale Times, in the studio with me. And good morning, Rod.
Good morning, Margaret.
And welcome, and thanks for putting up. Well, I suppose we always want to schedule you round about 10 o'clock. In the morning?
I sleep in. I'm getting old. I'm getting tired.
Oh, no, never admit that. No, Rod, you're doing a fantastic job. And look, what we're going to do this morning, just to lead off the show will be going to 12 o'clock with the 12 o'clock news. We'll be crossing over to that, and then the current affairs show, The Wire, at a little bit after that news bulletin. So, look, there's plenty of interesting things in the next 2 hours, and I really welcome you. Rod, we welcome you. You've got a cracking front page.
It's a cracker of a front page.
It is.
I might say at this stage, the front page has a small article on the council, and we have a very large article on the council on page 3, which is the second part of our sort of what you might call our mid-term report card on the council. Now, I won't go into that. I think that's a treat for someone to find.
Oh, we can talk about it a little bit.
But yeah. I mean, what I really want to say is that what prompted this comment I'm about to make is I got an email from a reader last night who complimented us, I think tongue in cheek, on the front page article on Thomas Mayo, and presume that in the next issue we'll equally highlight the No campaign. Mm. So I got to thinking about what we were all about, and I what I said to him in reply was, look, if we were a 16 page plus paper and a major media player, we would obviously have to do that. That would be our duty, to provide both sides or more sides. There might be three or four sides to any issue. But in this case, we're only a four-page A4 publication. Mm. And the way we approach it didn't evolve from any decision that we made, even though Ginny, she's the editor, my wife.
Yeah, and I keep getting that wrong, and I do apologise, Ginny. Ginny's the editor, Rod's the publisher.
That's right, yes.
And Rod's with me here in the studio.
I'm the dog's
body. Oh, you're the dog's body. Good on you.
And anyway, what was I going to say?
Oh, about the yes, no.
Yes. I said that we were basic. It was basically the readership that drove us down the path that we took. We had no clear idea, other than the fact that both of us were very experienced in newspapers.
Yep.
When the Express closed down its physical publication, we were at a loose end. We lived up here for 7 or 8 years, and Ginny has long history.
Well, you just have this wealth of experience and talent.
Her family goes back to the 1920s here.
Yeah,
And I've been up here many, many times in previous guises, so we have a very strong connection to this area. But we basically were sort of basically supervising our kids, and then this vacuum appeared, so we said, well, why don't we run a newspaper just to fill up what little idle time we have? So we did. But it was what we encountered, if you compare what we are now with what we were 3 years ago, that change has been community-driven.
Yep.
What we found is at least 25% of the population here, probably more, probably something like 35 to 40%, have absolutely no voice whatsoever. No one's interested in them except when it comes to dunging them with higher rates. No one's remotely interested in what they have to say. there's a very small coterie of people here, perhaps 2,000 people at the most, who've got things sewn up very nicely the way it is, and they're not about to share it with anyone else. And that's what we became the port of call for people saying, we're being treated really badly. I had a phone call from a guy the other day who I won't say what the issue is because people will know immediately what it is. But he's been treated by the council in a way which is totally different from someone else who's in exactly the same position as him. And he can't get to first base. He said, can you do anything about it? Well, I said, we could write an article, but I said, that'll just vanish into the ether. I said, what you've got to do, you've got to find out whether the council's got the power to say what they want you to believe they have. They want you to believe they have a certain power to do this to you, and you've got to find it. You've got to put your money in your hand in your pocket and go and see someone and say, what's the law here? Who's got the power? Have I got the power or have they got the power? But, I mean, the point I'm making is not that particular case, but people are gravitating to us because there's a vacuum here.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So there's a voice, there's a cry in the wilderness, I guess, for people to take notice. And one of the things in the 3 years has been you've noticed that that cry's not being heard by local government.
It's not being heard. I think this is accentuated. Since the election of this council, I mean, it was pretty hot what Viv May did in making, when he was only the administrator, making the rail trail council policy and therefore circumscribing what people could say subsequently about it. That was pretty hot. But I think the hottest thing started almost immediately after the election of this council, which has really demoralised a lot of people in the community. First of all, kicking the public out of the briefing sessions, and then, and it was done very, very, very by your good self, actually, when you're on the council.
Well, I've got to make a declaration here. Most of my listeners would probably know that I am an elected councillor on the Armidale Council, but I have sort of a code that I've got to abide by in respect of that role. When I'm here at the radio station, I have a completely different role, and that's the role I'm in at the moment, but I'm delighted for any public comment on the council that I'm
Advise people to go back to the, and it's all up on the net, you can call it up and live stream it, from the February council meeting last year, when the issue of whether in fact the rail trail had community support came up, and it was forensically picked apart that it had no support whatsoever. And what's more, there was a lot of murky fiddling with words and fiddling with numbers, and it started off from there, and then it got worse and worse. And I think the low point was reached with the SRV when people were asked to offer their comments on it, and hundreds offered their comments saying they didn't like it, and that was just dismissed. That was just, and I was actually, and it takes a lot to gobsmack me, but I was gobsmacked when I heard some councillors saying, well, we will interpret all those people who didn't write in as supporting us. And I think from that point on, people realised that they couldn't go to the council and be dealt with fairly. And there's been numerous instances since then, like the advertising for the book fair and that sort of thing. It's really got kind of out of control. And so what I'm getting back to is that the kind of position we take isn't because of a vendetta by the Armidale Times against the council. It's just that people are coming to us saying, what the hell can we do? You know, these things are happening to us. What can we do?
We're obliged
to write it up. And we will continue to do so. And I might, flowing on from that, this is the only issue on which you could say that we've actually emerged and shown our hand. And that is because there is no group in Armidale who has less voice than the Indigenous people who live here. There are absolutely no voice. So I suppose you could say that this is the first time that we've come out and we're sort of saying, well, we're going to support you people. We're going to support the voice, and we're going to be unequivocal about it. We don't feel we have any obligation to run the no camp. They seem to get plenty of airtime themselves to run the no campaign. They don't need any help from us. But the people who, particularly the people themselves, not so much the spokesman, not so much the Megan Davises on TV and those sort of people, or the, but the people, they want a voice too. Everyone wants a voice, especially when things impact on them really hard, harshly.
Yeah.
They impact on them harshly, and no one will listen to those. No one wants to listen to them because it suits the powers that be, quote unquote, in whatever venue, that things be made as easy as and smoothly as possible for them. But anyway, so that's why we decided to lead with the visit to Armidale of Thomas Mayo.
Well, I think Thomas Mayo's visit to, I mean, he's been travelling around for 6 years now since the Uluru Statement from the Heart.
Yeah.
And, I mean, our radio station, we're looking for a no person to balance the interview that we did.
You have to, yeah.
And we're looking to do that before, well, we now know that the referendum date is the 14th of October. So we've got a little bit of time up our sleeve to do that. But, I mean, it's a big event, I think, to pack the town hall, and that's exactly what happened.
Would have been 400 or 500 people there.
Yes.
Easy. Yeah. Now, I interviewed him just before that town hall meeting.
Right.
And I asked, and the structure, this is very unlike what we do, but the structure of that interview was I spent a lot of time thinking about it and got the what I thought were about the 9 most important questions that people would want to ask. So it's done in a Q&A format, and we just let him talk. And the thing about it was you couldn't be more clear about what he says. And the only thing I would add to what he said is that he is one of the nicest people I have ever met in my life.
They've chosen very well, haven't they?
The
ambassador.
He's just a wharfie from Darwin.
He's a wharfie from Darwin, but he's a man with a very softly spoken, generous
spirit.
Disposition, yeah.
I was watching him. There was the first question that was asked at the meeting, I thought was a very abrasive question. I whispered to Ginny, I said, Jesus, ouch. I said, but this is the question that's got to be asked because that question is the core of the No campaign. Forget all the racist garbage.
I'll recap just a tiny bit because I was there as well. And that question was basically along the lines of... It was coming from a no case perspective, and it was basically saying you Aborigines or you Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have a cultural problem. It's not a legal problem, it's a cultural problem. What you need culture to fix it up. Basically, it's your problem, you fix it.
Yep.
Which is, in fact, really what Aboriginal people who are proposing the voice are saying. We want the right to fix our own problems. But so it was a sort of negative, put-down-y sort of question, but it was a good question.
It was a good question. It was an important question.
And Mayo dealt with it by saying, well, actually, I don't think it is altogether cultural.
Yeah. But I thought he handled that brilliantly, I think. And the funny thing was I could see that he was keeping his cool and that sort of thing. And then the following day, Ginny said to me, he nearly blew his stack at that question. I said, how do you know? I said, he didn't say to me. She said, only a woman can say this. She said, he called the question a mate. And I said, in that context, to call someone mate like that is not a friendly gesture. It's not a gesture of mateship.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah.
No, but anyway, if we might move on, Margaret.
Yes, absolutely. So the front page has got really, if you want to know the structure of the Yes campaign from the horse's mouth, if you like, who's the nominated representative, I guess, of the Uluru Statement from the Heart, then Thomas Mayo's the one. So that's on the front page. And you've got a little piece there
about council fees,
about councillors' remuneration.
Yes,
really.
Yeah.
And the fact that in the July meeting, councillors voted for the maximum remuneration increase, which is, I think, was a 3% increase.
I didn't know that. In fact, there was a scale I didn't know until I wrote that. That across the state is divided up into certain categories, and the category that Armidale is in is called regional centres, I think, and it has a scale, a minimum and a maximum.
Yeah.
I found out that Armidale pays its councillors the maximum.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty good. But it didn't matter, really. I think the point we were making was it looked pretty hot after the rate increase.
I think it's a really good point to make. I don't know whether to comment or not. I think I won't.
No.
But I
wouldn't want you to.
No. But it's a point well made, and I think it's something that the community should be aware of, that the level of councillors' remuneration. I may be coming at it from a... No, I'm not coming at it from any angle. I'm just saying I think it's important for the community not to know that. And there it is on the front page, so that's great.
It is, yep. Yes. And there's a pointer from there to the part two of the council report card on page 3, which makes reference to that and various other matters.
Now, that page 3, you've got... it's entitled question mark, how much out of 10, councillor report card part 2, and... Look, I think it's a fair, somewhat critical, but it's nevertheless a fair perspective on how the community would be perceiving this particular council. Every council and all the councillors must be judged.
There must be. You know, one of the councillors spelled it out. And I won't name the councillor, but in all the meeting. Mm. But he said, we've been appointed to be the leaders of this community. And I thought, well, it'd be nice if those who... I don't recall the Act says that you're the leaders of the community. I think the Act says something about you representing the community. But anyway, that's beside the point. But I do want to talk about the article on page 2 about Trains North.
Mm-hmm.
That's a meeting that I didn't go to. That was not the inaugural meeting of Trains North, which we've covered. That's the community body that wants to re-establish the railway line and rail freight and passenger services between Armidale and the Queensland border.
Mm-hmm.
And
I guess I better declare myself. In another capacity, I actually prepared that report on that meeting. Yep.
Yes, and it's got a couple of points in there that I think are really... When I read it, I was sorry I hadn't gone to the meeting. I was actually burnt out. I didn't want another meeting to go to.
I can certainly relate to that feeling.
I was totally burnt out.
Yes.
And fortunately, you bobbed up and wrote the article for us.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the two points that came out were that the David Peters, the fellow who wants to build the food preserving facility in Gairia, employing 135 people. Mm-hmm. Let me repeat that. 135 people.
That's right.
Is still trying to get there and not getting any encouragement from the powers that be. And the other thing is that Matthew Tierney, who we have interviewed about how the campaign that he in particular waged in the early 90s to restore the trains from Tamworth to Armidale, we interviewed him about that. But he subsequently became the chairman of Trains North when it was inaugurated.
Mm-hmm.
And he said here, he added that the New South Wales government is deliberately mapping an empty space in the New England, notwithstanding the existing excellent rail infrastructure, including the Northern Line to Queensland, and despite it being currently protected by law. Now, I think that is the most pertinent thing in the paper, in the whole issue of the paper, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Because that would, if that's true, if in fact the New South Wales government, whether it's New South Wales government as such or the last coalition government, and then the Labor Party just tails along afterwards because it means they wanted to spend money, so they hide behind that. I don't know what the truth is. But if in fact it's true, it explains everything that I've been scratching my head about. Why people have been pushing these bizarre issues, like you can have a rail trail without ripping up the railway line.
Mm.
So why are they pressing on?
Mm.
Why are they trying to block David Peters, who's going to bring 135 jobs, if your perspective is to have a jobs-based population surge of 10,000?
Mm.
Why are you trying to block that?
Mm.
And, you know, it doesn't make... Oh, yes, and why are you running debt on the university being gutted and transferred to Tamworth?
Mm.
What, those things of themselves make no sense. But if, in fact, there is a perspective that nothing is worth fighting for north of Armidale, then it makes perfect good sense.
Mm.
And I think Matthew Tierney is well worth an interview on that particular point to elaborate on it. I really do.
Yes. Yeah, well, I think the... Well, I suppose... Speaking, no, I'll just, yeah, I can only agree with you. I wrote that paragraph, and it's a summary of what Matthew Tierney's address was about. He actually presented a series of maps, and that those maps show a deliberate removal. Well, in fact, what Matthew showed was that the most recent maps that is coming out of the New South Wales government, it would be the previous state government, not the current one. Have kind of whited out existing infrastructure.
Yeah.
Where services have been removed, but the actual infrastructure is currently protected, and they're actually showing the whole of the incomplete inland rail line as if it is complete. And that is very much in the federal sphere. And the latest, I understand there is a report due next month from three people that have been appointed by the federal government to look into the route, the potential route of the inland rail after the Kerry Schott report. And so to map a thing that isn't and then not map a thing that is.
Yeah.
We're talking the thing being the railway lines is somewhat peculiar, and shows perhaps a disturbing bias.
Well, some months ago, maybe 12 months ago,
it could be said to show a bias. Yeah,
12 months ago, we interviewed Tony Windsor about the inland rail, and I won't quote him because.
You can paraphrase, I guess, or just represent
but
what...
He was truly disturbed by the route that the inland rail was taking. And he suggested, I can't recall, I'd be putting words in his mouth, if he suggested or whether I deduced from his suggestion that, in fact, it had less to do with getting produce from inland New South Wales to port faster, because he said it doesn't stack up, and because he was the member when it was first contemplated. He said, "You've got to beat the cost, the time that it takes for a truck to go from Melbourne to Brisbane. That's 24 hours. You've got to beat that. So you can't be forever stopping, offloading, picking up, all because it'll take about 3 days."
Well, it was very much originally, and that 24-hour limit was very much.
It was fundamental to it. That was the whole idea of it, was to get...
Of the feasibility,
The trouble with that, of course, is that there are 5,000 farmers out there in New South Wales on the western slopes who want to get this stuff to market, so they can't stop 5,000 times and beat that 24-hour deadline. That's the key. So he was actually suggesting, or I concluded from what he was suggesting, that in fact it had more to do with Santos than it had to do with any farmers.
Yes, I have heard the suggestion that it's in fact a gas pipeline corridor.
Exactly, that's what I've heard.
I have heard that. I don't know whether it's a little bit fantastical to suggest it.
Or
but
a conspiracy theory.
Possibly, but there is a view out there that this may possibly be mapping a gas pipeline rather than a rail corridor. But anyway.
But anyway, let me move on to the bottom of page 3. Another very. I'm starting to get worried about this one. We did run a story once about water inquiry, but so far the government is dragging. It seems to be dragging its feet on a water inquiry, and I sent this copy off to the minister's office and received no reply. So I just wonder what's really going on with the water inquiry.
So there's a water inquiry that relates to the protection of regional water supply systems from privatisation.
The government didn't have the numbers in the upper house to get their proposal to enshrine in the state constitution the protection of Sydney Water and Hunter Water from any future privatisation. So they did a deal with the crossbench, who was Mark Banasiak, and I presume people like Latham and those sort of people.
So Mark Banasiak, MLC, he's from the Fishers and Shooters, MLC being member of the Legislative Council,
That's the upper house in the state parliament. And I presume people like Mark Latham and those people, that they would support the change to the state constitution to protect Sydney and Hunter Water if, in fact, the government agreed to set up a parliamentary inquiry into other water reticulation authorities' throughout the rest of New South Wales, which they did. But the thing is that 4 months have now elapsed and nothing's happened.
Yep.
So that's why that story is really about what Mark Banasiak thinks.
Yeah, so that's a great little update on on where that's up to. So that's
and
fantastic.
I wonder whether, in fact, because they sniff a drought on the horizon, they don't want to have any inquiry, which has everyone clamouring for money to be spent post-haste to shore up us against drought.
It needs to be. I mean, I guess it's widely known that the water supply right across the state is a state issue.
Exactly, it is.
Whilst local government does manage water distribution, if you like, the
control of the water is the state. Is a state issue.
Yeah, and the obligation to make sure that towns don't run dry is a state.
Well, they did last time. They stepped in and made sure the Gyre didn't run dry.
Well, yeah.
And if we turn to the back page, Virginia's done it again.
I love this article.
It's a beautiful article, isn't it? It's about the history of West Armidale. And the star of the article is Lynn Mole, who used to run Lynn's Shoe Teak down in the mall.
Yes, yeah, I know
she,
Lynn. Yeah.
Yeah, she grew up in Crescent Street, and then her family, extended family, became licensees of the Railway Hotel. And, and she writes about what it was like with women rushing out to bring their washing in before the steam trains arrived at the station.
To get soot on their washing.
That's right.
To prevent the soot getting on their washing. I love this little bit about the circus animals.
Yeah, the circus animals. And she's not the only person who's talked about this. And it was an absolute wonder. These steam trains used to regularly come to town with giraffes and what have you.
Lions.
And then they used to, I didn't realise until Ginny talked to Lynn, that they used to park them in that, what's now a playing field, behind West Armidale Public School. And that's where they used to birth them before they put them on display. And all the kids used to run along the fences looking over there and seeing all these lions and elephants and what have you in there.
Yeah.
It was absolute magic.
But the wonderful thing about this, if you're a newcomer, as I am relatively, 25 years, I think still new, is that it's a beautiful history of a really vital part of Armidale,
which was a very dynamic part of Armidale.
The manufacturing part. And I do know that I was taken on a tour many years ago, but it was just the most wonderful tour, and told where all these factories were. Armidale was self-sufficient.
Yeah, it was.
Back in the last century, in the century before that, it was sort of from the 1850s onwards, Armidale made its own power and its own cordial, two or three bread places.
Well, that block of land diagonally opposite where the library is now, that was gasworks.
Yep.
That was a gasworks. And you can tell that, in fact, what was there was bigger than the building that's there now, because it's the only building in Armidale that's got a huge grass verge around it.
Huge curtilage, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
And the liveliness of that, and I'm really promoting when I talk about the convict exhibition that's at the Historical Society. One of the notable convicts was, I think it was John Trim, but anyway, Mr. Trim, who came here as a convict and made a bit of a fortune as a businessman here. And
you can see in the top left-hand corner, there's a photograph there of the building with Trim & Co. there, and it's still there at the bend in Crescent Street, except now you can't get in it. It's entry is sideways. It's part of Freeman House.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
But it's still there.
So if you want to get a real, you know, insight into the town within the town, this West Armidale precinct, which was just a magnificently active precinct, the back pages, and there's some lovely photographs as well.
Including elephants.
There are indeed.
There are two photographs of elephants in the streets of Armidale.
Oh, there are two, and caravans and...
And see down the left-hand side, there's a photograph of a steam train pulling into Armidale Station.
Yeah, yeah. No, and all the facilities for steam are still there. More or less, because we had a steam train a couple of weeks ago.
Yes.
Yeah. Fueling up and,
Well, you mentioned really the convicts thing. That John Hoare, who did who curated the exhibition on West Armidale, curated the exhibition on convicts.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he did. He's quite a notable fellow.
Isn't that fantastic? Listen, I think this is a really terrific issue. And look, there's some hard-hitting stuff about the council, which I think everybody needs to read.
Yeah.
It's another point of view.
Yeah, it's a point of view.
And that's what is really needed, I think, in our community at the moment. So thank you so much.
Hey, pleasure. It's Rod, always a pleasure, Margaret.
All right, and thank you. We'll look forward to you coming in same time next month.
Yep.
Pretty much to talk about the next edition.
Look forward to it.
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you so much, John. Sorry, Rod.
I wish I was called John.
Do you really?
Then I'd be President of the United States.